Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Pleasure to have you with us. Just a reminder that Film Week comes up tomorrow. Tomorrow, national holiday in observance of Independence Day. And on Film Week, our critics review the filmed version of the stage musical Hamilton. This actually filmed live on Broadway. I think it was a couple of years or more ago that they actually filmed this. And now it's being released on Disney Plus, and it's got the original Broadway cast of Lin-Manuel Miranda, of Philippa Sue, Leslie Odom Jr., David Diggs. Thomas Kail is the director, and we'll find out what our critics have to say about that tomorrow at 11 on Film Week. Also, the French drama The Truth, which is starring Catherine Deneuve and Juliette Binoche, and John Lewis' Good Trouble, a look at the 60-plus years of social activism and legislative leadership of John Lewis. That's all tomorrow at 11 o'clock on Film Week on KPCC. Well, for many who've been close watchers of NASCAR auto racing and of Mississippi state politics, it might be shocking that just within the past couple of days, the Mississippi state legislature and the governor have signed off on removing the Confederate battle flag from Mississippi state flag. A couple of weeks ago, NASCAR banned the Confederate battle flag from all of its events. This has been a contentious issue for many years, both places, as well as throughout the American South. Joining us to talk about the flag, its symbolism, how it's perceived by different groups, and how it came to be ingrained within other cultural spheres within the American South, is professor of history at Dartmouth College in New Hampshire, Matthew Delmont. He's the author of a number of books, including Half American, The Epic Story of African Americans Fighting World War II at Home and Abroad. Professor Delmont, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk first of all about just your personal thoughts on the state of Mississippi and NASCAR taking these steps after years of criticism and controversy. Were you surprised this finally happened?
I am surprised it finally happened. It's long overdue, but I think for both of them, it's a really big moment. I think symbols matter, and the Confederate flag is a symbol of racial hatred and of slavery in our country. And for those two, a state and a large organization to take this step, I think it's a very important statement about where they see themselves right now and where the country might go in the future.
And for those who've supported retaining the Confederate battle flag, what are their arguments in favor of it? What to them does it culturally depict?
So for folks who are in favor of maintaining the Confederate flag, they would normally say in public that it's about heritage and not hate. So it's referencing some of the traditions of the South, both military traditions, but also just a way of life of the South, and that it's not purposely referencing slavery or white supremacy. That would be their argument.
All right. And let's talk about in Mississippi, how did it happen to be the last state with this sort of official embrace of the Confederate battle flag?
Well, these debates about what the Confederate battle flag means have been going on for 150 years. And so over the last, I'd say, two or three decades since the civil rights era of the 1960s, it's become less and less tenable for institutions to maintain the Confederate flag. And so there were protests in the 1990s, 2000s against the remaining states that had the Confederate flag. Eventually, Alabama gave up and took theirs down. South Carolina gave up and took theirs down. Mississippi was really the last holdout. And I think it speaks to how deeply ingrained, a love of that flag was among white Mississippians, and particularly the politicians who, in the face of really nationwide concern about it and concern among black Mississippians, they wanted to maintain that flag. So to see it finally come down is really a big step.
You know, I think about even in popular culture, it was the old TV series, The Dukes of Hazzard. Didn't the car have a Confederate flag on it? It was sort of a shorthand symbol for the South.
Exactly. Yeah, I grew up watching Dukes of Hazzard. That was the General Lee that had the Confederate flag on. I played with that race car. This is as a black kid in Minneapolis, well before I really understood the history of what that flag meant. Yeah, and so I think it was part of a successful campaign over generations to disassociate that flag from a history of slavery and white supremacy and make it just a more common reference to the South. And I think for folks who understand that history and have tried to articulate what the flag was really about and why it was a racist symbol, this has been a long fight to get it brought down in states like Mississippi.
We're talking with Dartmouth College professor Matthew Delmont. If you'd like to talk with him about his scholarship on the Confederate battle flag with these very significant recent developments of NASCAR banning the flag at its events and the state of Mississippi after years of controversy and heated criticism of the state keeping it in their state flag, the legislature and the governor agreeing to remove it from the state flag. 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. You can also ask a question on the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. I'm also particularly interested if you're someone who was from the American South, your perceptions growing up of the Confederate flag, what it represented to you, your feelings about it, and what your feelings are now about it being removed from these very prominent places where it's been displayed. 866-893-KPECC. Professor Delmont, can you talk a little bit about how the flag enjoyed a resurgence? When did it... Because there was a gap right after the Civil War and then to when it became popularized later.
Yes. So the Civil War was fought between 1861 and 1865. After the South is defeated in 1865, you don't see an immediate wave of Confederate monuments or circulation of the Confederate flag. It's really about four decades later in the 1890s that the first wave of monuments the Confederates start to show up, and the Confederate flag starts to recirculate. What people attribute it to, what scholars attribute it to, are these moments of political transformation and of Black Americans demanding rights. That's where you see the popularity of the Confederate flag start to surge within the South. So in the 1890s, that's when white Southerners are passing Jim Crow laws. Those are the official laws that mandate racial segregation. You see another wave in the 1910s, right around World War I, as some of the first mainstream civil rights organizations are taking shape and African Americans are fighting for their country and coming home and demanding rights. That's when a film like Birth of a Nation gets created and presents this kind of romanticized vision of the South. There's another wave then in the World War II era. A number of white Southern soldiers go off to the European and Pacific theaters. They bring Confederate flags with them. And so when they liberate towns in Italy and France, they fly the Confederate flag either alongside the American flag or instead of the American flag. Just after the war, the Dixiecrats, Southern politicians, break away from the mainstream Democratic Party. They take up the Confederate flag as their battle flag. And then the 1960s, a lot of white Southerners pick up the Confederate flag again as a way to express their resentment or backlash to the Civil Rights era. So you see it kind of cyclically, the flag come back for specific political purposes.
And is any of this relate to Southerners' feeling of being dismissed or looked down upon by people in the rest of the country, accents being ridiculed and people in the South being caricatured? Is part of this related to sort of a Southern pride movement?
I think absolutely. I think for a lot of white Southerners from end of the Civil War, I would say even into today, the Confederate flag represents a way of them expressing their pride in Southern heritage. I think that part is true. It's also a way of expressing their own sense that they won't be sort of under the thumb of who they would consider to be Northern elites or liberals. I think those sentiments can be true at the same time that the flag has very obvious roots in slavery and white supremacy.
Yeah, I didn't mean to suggest that that was an alternative, but just an additional factor of sort of cultural assertion in the wake of ridicule. We're talking with Dartmouth College professor Matthew Delmont, professor of history. And again, I'm particularly interested for those listening, if you are from the South, what your memories are of the Confederate battle flag, your associations with it, and your thoughts about these two prominent places, the flag being removed, the Mississippi state flag and NASCAR banning the flag from its races. Also joining us is professor of history at the University of North Carolina, Asheville, Daniel Pierce. He focuses on Southern and Appalachian history. He's the author of Real NASCAR, White Lightning, Red Clay, and Big Bill France. Professor Pierce, good to have you with us. Are you there, Professor Pierce? All right, we'll try and get you back on. Let's take listener call here from Tiffany in Burbank. Tiffany, I understand you grew up in Daytona?
I did. And so, you know, just I was actually down the street from NASCAR, the Daytona 500, where it's held. And I saw the Confederate flag a lot growing up. And it never really bothered me, you know. It's so strange. I'm African-American, and my father would always say we were going to live and die free in Dixie. And so it was this thing where, yeah, the Confederate flag, I understood it represented slavery, but somehow it didn't really register the meaning behind it. You know, in my heart. It wasn't until I went to Virginia for college and I had friends who were from the North, and their reaction to the flag really brought home that, oh, this is something that I need to take more stock of.
Were you surprised when your friends in college who weren't from the South were sort of shocked about the Confederate flag?
I was. It was kind of I was a little taken aback. Or I was kind of like, why are you guys so fearful of this? Like, it was like if they saw someone wearing it or if it was on the back of a truck, they would immediately have negative connotations towards it. And so then I had to really take stock of why I didn't feel that way. And it was mainly because I think it was so prevalent that you just began to disregard it.
Yeah. And so, Tiffany, what are your feelings now about NASCAR removing the flag and Mississippi taking it off their state flag?
You know, I honestly think it's a really good step, mainly because it's starting to teach us the history, and we can take stock of it from a historical standpoint. And it's more so, you know, removing Confederate monuments and flags. I think it's more important that we're talking about it and than anything, than the actual removing of it, you know, so that we start to have a different connotation and understanding of our history in America.
Tiffany, I appreciate it. And what are your feelings about growing up in the South? Do you have a sense still of association or pride in it, or do you have negative feelings about it?
No, you know what? I'm so proud to be from the South. Even with the struggles and being African American, there's just a really warm feeling for me personally when I think of home.
Tiffany, I appreciate it so much. Very eloquently said. Tiffany, from originally from Daytona Beach, Florida, joining us today from Burbank and talking about how just regular it was to have the Confederate flag, particularly growing up where NASCAR's biggest race was at. Professor Delmont, your thoughts about what Tiffany was just saying.
Yeah, I think she makes a great point about how the Confederate flag and Confederate monuments are normalized in many parts of the country and are just part of the landscape. That particularly if you grow up in a place, you walk by a flag every day, you walk by a monument every day, you don't necessarily give it a lot of thought until you go to someplace else and are exposed to some different ideas about it. So I think that's a really important point about how sort of deeply ingrained the symbol has become in large parts of the country.
And in your mind, are there alternative symbols of Southernness or Southern culture that don't hearken slavery and Jim Crow and other abuses of African Americans?
Absolutely. I mean, you could even just focusing on the musical realm, right? You could put up flags to Hank Williams and Loretta Lynn rather than to the Confederacy. The South, I mean, all regions of the country, I think, have very rich histories and traditions that they should well be proud of. The South definitely does. Politically, in many ways, I mean, many of the most important civil rights leaders came from the South. Food, music, culture, all aspects of it can be celebrated. I think it's this particular symbol and the associated symbols are the ones that have represented racial hatred for so long that there are many better ways to celebrate Southern heritage.
My son and I, a couple of years ago, did a coast-to-coast driving trip through the American South. And going to Memphis and hitting four museums in a day devoted to music and the incredible sound of Memphis, and going on the trails of the civil rights marches that are such a huge part of our history, and seeing all the different subcultures that are a part of the American South. It is incredibly rich and highly varied as well. Let me introduce, I think we have him now, Daniel Pierce of University of North Carolina, Asheville, historian and author of the book Real NASCAR. Professor Pierce, thank you for being with us. Were you surprised that NASCAR finally took this step and banned the flags?
A little, but, I think as Matt mentioned, this historical moment, and as historians, we know that things don't change until they do, and that was the case with NASCAR, I think, that they were faced with a historical moment. I think one very important thing in all of this issue of the flag is that, and of Southern symbols, is that, for so long, African-American voices were not consulted on these issues. And I think when Bubba Wallace, the only African-American driver in NASCAR, spoke up, and again, the historical moment with the Black Lives Matter movement, I think NASCAR had to take notice of what was going on. They had tried kind of passively before, after the Charleston shootings, to encourage people to not bring Confederate flags. But I think it was time to take a stand.
All right. We'll continue our conversation with our two historians talking with us about NASCAR and its ban on the Confederate battle flag at all of its events, and the state of Mississippi removing and doing it very quickly after years and years of fighting over that, removing the Confederate flag from its state flag. You're listening to Air Talk on KPCC. I'd love to hear listeners who are from the American South. You talk about what the flag there has meant to you and your thoughts about being removed from these two prominent locations. Back in 1 minute on Air Talk. We're talking about the many years of controversy and criticism over the Confederate battle flag being displayed in the American South. And then, in fairly quick succession, NASCAR banned the flag from all of its gatherings, a huge move where the infield and elsewhere, Confederate flags are just all over the place. And then Mississippi, the last state to have as part of its state flag, the Confederate battle flag. I'm asking those who come from the South to share their observations about the Confederate flag. Nelson in Silver Lake, I understand you grew up in Dallas. What's your history with the flag?
So, yes, I grew up in the South in Dallas. And honestly, I was quite apathetic when it came to the flag. I grew up watching Dukes of Hazzard. The flag was pretty prevalent. But then it wasn't until there were instances, for example, when at one point I was chased at night by a group of individuals in a truck displaying the rebel flag hanging proudly from behind, as well as, many racist incidents where people were proudly emblazoned with the flag. So it wasn't until then that I started forming some sort of opinion.
Yeah, so the symbolism dramatically shifted for you. Now, I understand that the high school that you attended, the Confederate flag was flown?
Yeah, so that was our symbol. And this was way back in 1993 was the year that I graduated. And even then, African Americans were taking issue with the flag. And as a senior and as an honors student, they valued my opinion, so they asked what my thoughts were about all of the issues that were forming around the flag. And my simple response was, well, if this is supposed to be a symbol of school spirit and bring people together, and it's tearing people apart, why would you want to keep that as a symbol of school spirit and togetherness? So they decided they were going to remove it back then. But they never really did. They just changed some things around, and there were still some symbols that were still kind of ingrained. And it hasn't been until just this year with the George Wallace incident that students graduating this year demanded that that flag would be removed. And so it's been removed now.
So it was the videotape of George Floyd and the protests and all that came after that that finally did it, similar to NASCAR and Mississippi state flag. So Nelson, for you, given, you know, this is so personal that you were harassed with the symbol of that flag accompanying that harassment that you experienced, do you have strong emotions about it coming down from your high school?
Well, I do, and I think that, you know, if you look at the flag and you look at the monuments as well, and you look at the history, the monuments, most of them were put up by the Daughters of Confederacy specifically to sort of thumb a nose at the people that did not want, you know, the slavery and who actually, you know, who won the war and whatnot. And so these things are very prevalent in public spaces for people to see. So when you look at the history, there's a very specific reason, and I think that's where we as African Americans have taken a deep dive, and want people to understand why it is that it's offensive and why we don't want those in the public space.
Nelson, I so appreciate you sharing your high school experiences with us, and some of them clearly, you know, just terrible experiences, and how your understanding of the Confederate flag shifted over that time. We really appreciate it. Let me take another listener call. This is from Carmi. I understand you grew up in both North Carolina and Georgia. Share your experiences briefly, please.
I grew up in North Carolina. My grandparents would show up, and we would go tour the Confederate battlefields and go see the places where, quote, those Yankees would hold my great-great-grandfather who fought for the South. And I have to say, we were fed this narrative of this was all about states' rights. It was not about slavery. That was something that the people from the North added on to, you know, make their cause just. But this was really about states' rights. And the flag symbolized that, like this kind of like proud individualism of states' rights. And it really wasn't until I became an adult and started educating myself and learning. And I think it's because I left the South that I did that and became, you know, friends with a vast variety of people that I realized how wrong that teaching was.
Carmi, have you had conversations with family members over this, or has your family shifted in its perspective at all?
You know, that's what's funny. I grew up in a very liberal family in the South, which is a rarity, but my father was an Episcopal priest, and we were very liberal, and even in a very liberal family, there was this kind of whitewashing of what that flag meant. I mean, we all, yes, my cousins and I have talked about it now, about, you know, how when my cousin went off to college, he was so homesick. He came here to UCLA, and he was so homesick, he hung the flag up in his dorm room.
I assume that didn't go over well.
It did not. And he was so baffled by it because to him it just meant the South.
Yeah, taste of home. Carmi, I so appreciate it. We're getting short on time, but I want to go back to Professor Matthew Delmont of Dartmouth College. So interesting to hear from people who have this cultural tie, particularly when they're young, and then that shifts over time.
Absolutely. And I think the first call, I think Nelson from Dallas, saying that this is part of just the iconography of the logo of the mascot of his high school. Going into this year, there were nearly 2,000 different Confederate symbols in public spaces. So not just the monuments and the flags, but schools and roads and hospitals named after Confederates or aspects of the Confederacy. So again, just the way in which it's been sort of normalized as part of the landscape. And then to the second caller, it's one of the most successful history campaigns of all time to get this, what scholars call the lost cause version of the Civil War history, where we present the history of the South as being a noble, just cause. We paper over or whitewash the history of slavery. That was the mainstream approach to how this history was taught in almost all American high schools and colleges through the 20th century. Obviously, through the Daughters of the Confederacy, had a huge imprint on the public history of it. And I think that's important as we think about it now, that this is not just a moment of political correctness or cancel culture, whatever you want to call it, but that people have been fighting these battles over this history for generations and generations. And I think, as Professor Pierce mentioned, that now that we're finally starting to listen more to the voices of Black Americans and Black Mississippians, we're seeing different choices being made.
All right. Frank, in Cathedral City in the Coachella Valley, quick memory from your Southern childhood.
I think if you grow up in the South and you get exposed to this history from that point of view, you certainly may have a tendency to ignore that original sin of the American democratic experiment, which is slavery. But I also think if you try to look at the struggles of the great men, Abraham Lincoln and Ulysses Grant and the people who took up the banner of the Union, and you try to pretend they weren't fighting against anybody, that's not going to serve the public discourse. I think that if you try to eliminate history, if you try to banish history, then you're traveling down the same pathway as China in the Cultural Revolution. Certainly history is written by the winners, but I think that to pretend that either side of any argument, you know, it's easy to look at things through a retroscope and say, okay, this is 100% bad and this is 100% good. I don't hear much discussion about the deplorable Union POW camps. I don't hear much about the campaign of Sherman that stripped an entire area of the South of the ability to grow its own food or feed its own people.
All right. Hey, Frank, we're getting short on time. I appreciate, though, your contribution to the conversation. Professor Pierce, you want to respond to that?
Well, I think, you know, you hear a lot about this eliminating history stuff. And I think, you know, as Professor Delmont would probably agree, is that what we as historians want is for people to look at the history. And I think that's what we need to do, is to look with a clear eye at the history, because, again, much of what has passed for history, particularly the South and the Confederacy, was totally invented. And so when you look at it with a clear eye, and when you look at it from the public perspective, you know, not just from a single segment of society, you get a very different picture. And fortunately, I think, you know, we're in a historical moment here where not only are people starting to listen more to voices from the Black community, but they're also starting to maybe listen a bit to historians, which is a great development, I think.
Daniel Pierce is one of those historians. He's at the University of North Carolina, Asheville, and author of Real NASCAR, White Lightning, Red Clay, and Big Bill France. Professor, thank you for being with us. And from Dartmouth College, historian Matthew Delmont. Matt, thank you also for being with us. We really appreciate you sharing this broader history of the Confederate battle flag.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Coming up, we talk about Facebook's decision to ban a number of different groups associated with the Boogaloo movement. We'll find out what it is coming up on Air Talk in just 90 seconds.